This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 121, and I'm your host, Simon Bound. My mission here at the Alien UFO Podcast is to investigate all things that are part of the wider UFO phenomena. I'm looking at UFO sightings, alien abduction, historic cases, and other related events. And if you want to hear the extended version of this interview, please join the Patreon campaign. You can get a 7-day free trial where you can access more than 100 episodes in the back catalogue. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe. So this week I'm talking to Althea Provost about her book, Four Aliens and a Funeral, A Memoir of Perception. Althea has had ET contact throughout her life that has helped her on her spiritual path. Hi Althea, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So your book's called Four Aliens and a Funeral. But why did you give it that title?
It actually was the closing chapter in terms of how that came about with a moment that happened with my brother. And I don't want to give that closing chapter away, but it's something that was very personal to me in the sense that it was a full circle moment.
Can you tell us what happened when you were at a concert? And was it that your friend was driving the car and you saw something?
So I open with Conscious Encounters, the Alien Kind. And this is where I went with a pack of girlfriends to Reggae on the River. It's in Oregon, kind of like the border of Oregon and California. And my girlfriends ditched me. They didn't want to stay. They wanted to return back home. And I ended up staying with a father and with my girlfriend's father. And we drove back with a concert goer. And we were driving my dad's Mercedes Benz at the time. And we saw an alien on the side of the road. It was standing there. It wasn't like a doll or motionless in the sense that it was a stuffed figure. It was a living, breathing alien. It was gray. And I saw it. And at the time that I saw it, I likened that moment to a cosmic wake-up call. I understood that I was just given notice. And that notice was it was time to kind of leave the earthly dimension behind and all the principles that go with it and to expand. And that I was not at any level going to be able to get out of that cosmic growth period. It was either embrace it or have a life of suffering, to be honest. And I knew it. It was just an instantaneous knowing that it was now time to take a different tact in life and to grow my understanding and welcome the experience into my life, or otherwise it was going to be very painful.
So it's like you're on a journey and there are baby steps, and it's like this gray showed itself to you to like prompt you to make the next step.
Yeah, well, I had to accept the fact that it happened. And oftentimes when humans are going through growth, they're terrified of the experience and terrified of the spiritual guidance that they're about to receive, whether that's cosmic or something that their inner intuition is telling them, or their gut is saying, hey, it's time to embark from the safe path, the known path, the bank account, the house, the things that we surround ourselves with, you know, our comforts, our religions, these type of things, and move towards fate, move out of fate and into destiny. And destiny requires, frankly, the fact that you're about to say yes to an inner sense or your guidance or that gut knowing, and it requires some self-esteem to say yes. And this is where the fork in the road happens, where some people can go back and regress and decide not to take that path. And that's absolutely fine. And deny and never speak about it. You hear this, you know, it's 20 years have gone by, 30 years, man, I haven't said this, you know. And for myself, I just knew that that was not a choice, that those interactions could become bigger, more often and needed. More grandiose, you can say, more in my face, if I didn't accept the invitation.
And the other people in the car saw the gray as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They absolutely did. And, you know, it's interesting because when you have something, like I said in the beginning, we're talking about those first three chakras, and this might sound woo-woo, but it's going to hit you. It's going to hit your gut, your sense of safety. It's going to turn your world upside down if you're not used to having an out-of-the-box experience. And you are going to relate to the world differently after that. It's just, that's what happens. So for myself, it hit me in the throat chakra. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to give voice to it. I didn't want to speak about it in a way that articulated its realness, because it overpowered me in that way. I mean, my thing was just to put my head back and groan. I was like, oh no, this is what just happened to me. And I can't get out of it.
And was there a thing in your life when you were younger that you had encounters with ETs? And was that a thing where you kind of closed them off?
When I was younger, crib and forward, I didn't close them off. What they did was they left a soul imprint, a trigger moment inside my physical body, for me to retrieve at a later time when it was necessary, so that I can recall the experience and everything that went with it. I can look back at this point in time and say, I know that they assisted me with my third eye technology. So they enhanced my ability to see, and then left it and then pulled back. So what happens is you'll reach a threshold, I would think, or at least it happened for me. You reach a threshold of understandings where you trust yourself enough to take a deeper dive into the inner exposure of your own truth. And at that point in time, those reveals start coming forward. And it isn't really something that you can leap into. You might have to take a small step towards it, because it can overpower the psyche. And there can be breakdowns emotionally, mentally. You can question your own sanity. You can question whether or not what your place is on this world. It can level you, put it that way. And so I understood as a young child that my third eye technology was enhanced, and that I would be seeing future forward scenarios as a life map to navigate this dimension, so that I didn't get lost in the fixedness of Earth, and thinking that, you know, a solid wall is actually solid, and that fear is the ruling, you know, name of the game here, and power over people and your bank account kind of thing. So these moments that occurred throughout my life were in essence to keep me on track.
And when you say third eye technology, you're making it sound like it's made, there's bits of metal and transistors or chips or whatever, but that's not what you mean, is it?
No, we have a Socratic system that interacts with all of life, not just here on the physical. So it's cosmic in nature. It's universal in nature. What the ETs can do is they can facilitate that energetic system within your own body to fine tune it in a way that you can interact with the world more consciously. So in my book, I likened a moment where my husband had to come down the stairs and tell me that the printer was not working. And frankly, had he developed his own ability to work with his physical body, his intuitive nature, he could have just told me that mind to mind, and I would have got it. And if he was receptive to mind contact, he would have heard my response. But this takes training and it takes time. But the ETs, my ET family, the Gray family, turned it on a little bit more in during my crib time.
Right. Okay. It's like they're mechanics and they're fine tuning you. And is it that perhaps they come back every few years and do a little more fine tuning?
That's exactly it. They came back and I call it fiddled with my DNA to make sure that the human world, the density of this vibration on Earth, wasn't taking a toll on my energetic system. Because if you work or have had ship interaction and you're going back and forth from these dimensional planes, it's hard on the physical body. It's difficult on the physical body. And I had recently, a couple of years ago, went up on some of the higher planes where the light was so bright. I call it 10,000 suns bright. And in effect, came back and felt the physical experience of like radiation sickness, where my cells felt sick. And they helped me with that to get the body to transmute that light more efficiently.
Yeah, that 10,000 suns reminds me of something people who have near-death experiences say. When they're out of their body and they go to a spiritual space, they see a light that is so, so bright, but it doesn't hurt their eyes. And that's because, right, I suppose they don't have physical eyes in that space.
That's right. Yeah, we're working with the subtle body, or some people call it the astral body. We just use different languages for it. So I call it my light body. So I went out in light body. I was with a group of clients. We were sitting in a circle, like with Native Americans that were working with the earth and saying, essentially that things weren't going so well here and they were concerned. And in this space, you could call it the light beings come forward, but they're so brilliantly bright that it is painful to even my own light body, that there's a stair step expression where my light body cannot take on that amount of light and then come back in this physical body without having issues.
Is it like there's too much energy and the human body can't handle it?
Right. So I was running Kundalini energy at the time where my back was just straight and running a powerful, powerful bright light as all of us were in that circle to hold the circle open to come into this higher resonance with the light beings. And what happened was, is my physical body, when I came back, I couldn't turn my head right or left for 3 days. And my back was extremely sore because of holding that resonance. Now, what happens is that you can, on some levels, choose to not remember it, but your physical body, once again, like I said at the crib, will hold the memory of it. And that's why past life regressionists, I haven't had that happen to me, but past life regression and things like this can access those moments because they're going into that subconscious mind and the physical body will feel it. As I am told, I haven't, again, had those experiences, but I've heard people say that they can literally see the scene and feel everything all at one time.
With what you're doing, is it that you have a task? I don't know how to put it. Perhaps before you're born, you think you agree that you're going to come to Earth and that you have a job to do. There's a mission, and that perhaps you're part of a team.
I do have a soul team here on the planet. When you come into your soul team, what I can say is that people, places, and things come into your life at the right timing when it's to help you on your evolution or to support your evolution. And you will meet those people, places, and things with it, like it's so synchronistically timed that you can't miss the fact that it's scripted. It is so scripted. And if you're open to that script, then you're open to that greater synchronicity and you can see how the universe is working on your behalf to help you through the transformation process, which transformation, let's face it, on this earth right now, it's chaotic. And, you know, this is a time when we're in revolution evolution, where we move from this energy of what does the future look like? And if we are asking those questions, then we have to ask, what are we doing to create a future?
But I want to change the subject a little bit.
Sure.
Because in the book, you say in 1984, you awoke to find that your hair had been cut.
Yeah.
So why would they want your hair?
I didn't know at the time why they wanted my hair. I just know that I woke up and I had severely cut micro bangs that were cut at an angle. So it wasn't like they were cut straight across and short. They were like two snipped, you know, bunches of hair that were cut. And that was the defining moment for me in terms of ending conscious contact with my team. This is when I was, you know, like basically I expletive, leave me alone, because I recognized that physical component was coming in. It wasn't just going up in light body or say learning and teaching or being guided. Now it was like I'm seeing the physical effects of it on my body as a child. And what I later learned from other contactees at the time was that they were using the hair to monitor the DNA and health of the contactee.
Right. Okay. So it's just a little bit of science to just check on you and make sure everything's okay.
For me, I would think that other people, and this isn't, I couldn't say this is the case or not the case, but they also can use your DNA to create children. Yeah.
And so do you find that you are aware of what your mission is? Because I've talked to people who are contactees and they say, yeah, I have a mission. I'm sure I do, but I don't know what it is.
I wanted to know, as a soul on an emerging planet, if I could have the full capacity to have compassion for the evolution of a species in transition through rapid fire transition, and that what that compassion would look like if I had future scenes shown to me, and those future scenes were not necessarily a direction or an impersonal intention of mine. So, for example, if I knew that someone that I loved was going to get in a car accident and I was not allowed to intervene or tell them they were going to get in a car accident, could I see that person as sovereign and whole and having their own experience that's needed and necessary for them in their evolution, and yet have compassion for the fact that I wouldn't want that for them, that I might have an opinion on it or would prefer a different outcome, but that it's not my place to have that outcome?
Do you have visions or have you been shown future Earth outcomes? Because I've also heard from experiencers that sometimes the ETs, the Greys, will sit them down and show them nuclear war or great devastation on the Earth.
So I have not had that in terms of devastation to the planet. That isn't something that I've been shown. I've been shown life-affirming actions in terms of how the universe will step in, how people will receive guidance and step in and make a selfless act of compassion or a selfless act of transformation that changes the script. I've seen that, which is very life-affirming. So I have not had one in which I'm living out nightmarish scenarios and seeing that and having to work out the fear of that. No, rarely does that occur. Sometimes I'll see political moments. I did see the missile over the Middle East. I saw that one in April. And at the time, I had a lot of personal stuff going on that I couldn't attend to that information right away. And I simply just asked for the cliff notes. Like I just could not decipher. I didn't have the time to decipher it.
Because I wonder if what they're showing is an evolution on the planet, and that we need to go through this devastation for the human race to move forward.
Unfortunately, people need pain and broad spectrum awareness before they're willing to say, I'm not going to agree. I'm just not going to agree to this. I want something better for my life. I want something better for my family and my community. And so they need those experiences Personally, I don't need death and destruction to motivate me.
One thing I thought was a little weird that you said there was a time you were in your room and you were reading a book and this orb appeared in your room that was quite big, like this ball of light. And you almost, you looked at it and acknowledged it, but then went back to reading your book. Was that right?
I did. Yeah. Well, you have to remember, I mean, I've been seeing since a child. So seeing things, it's nothing new. It's not something that is novel to me in that way. So I'm constantly interrupted by things. For example, I could get somebody's guides coming to me because I'm an open channel and say, you know, can you intervene with your neighbor? They're having a difficult time. Will you call them? And, you know, so my channel can be at times busy. And so when I shut that door and lock that door, that is signaling to the universe, this is my time to do what I want. And to read a book is wonderful. A wonderful experience. That means I get to learn about somebody else in some other place and explore their thoughts. And so when the orb kept coming, you know, it was an intrusion, frankly, even if it was a pleasant one. And ironically, it was once again like the gray tea on the side of the road telling me to rise to an occasion of by stretching to come into wholeness. You know, it was a spiritual invitation in 2008 to say it's time to grow up in a bigger way, to take some bigger life choices. And the choices that came my way, I ended up taking. I reluctantly, you know, I went through a near-death experience. I had my chakras blown open. I remembered past lives. I mean, it was just a crazy year. But had I said no, again, those type of experiences come harder and heavier.
I thought it was interesting because the orb returned, was it every day? And eventually it transformed into a being that was about 5.5 feet tall.
Yeah, into a light being.
Yeah, and I wondered if it was, they were like, look, she's not paying attention. We've got to do more here.
But you got to remember, my daughter was in the other room at the time and she was just a young child and they were showing up to her as well. So we both went through a catalytic experience of a year in which we were changing. And again, that change was, she was more graceful about it. You know, I was more resistant about it, but she's the one that delivered the message. She said, you know, Mom, all I can think of is they're telling us to stretch, you know, and she was right. This was the year in 2008. That we were going to go through some big changes, how we perceive the world. Again, moving from that concreteness of the physical world into understanding that we're more than that.
There's another thing in the book I got to ask about. There's something about you were at a bus stop and there was an old couple there and they started talking to you.
So I lived in Long Beach at the time on a boat. And it was my father's boat. It was like a 50-foot Yorktown, more bulbous for deep sea that can take a wave and basically roll back over and keep on going. So I'm living on this boat, one fork, one knife, one spoon situation. And I'm in college at the time. And, you know, my life was pretty simple. Sunset comes, a bunch of us would that lived at the dock would go out and, you know, roast some fish and watch the sunset and I'd come back. And so life was really simplified so that I could do this higher level education. And I would go to the supermarket every day to collect food. And at one point in time, I had my bags in hand and I was coming back. And I decided to skip a few blocks by taking the Long Beach trolley. And when you're in Long Beach, it's by day, it's a very white crowd, a business crowd, people spilling out onto the patios to have their lunch, business meetings, this type of thing. But by night, it becomes more of an African-American environment. You know, nightclubs open, homeless people arouse, some homeless cats type of thing start wandering the streets. So It changes drastically. And when I was at the bus stop, I was approached by a couple that were in finely dressed, and man had a wool suit pressed perfect. The woman had, you know, a dress and a top handle bag, and she would not leave me alone. She was just asking me question after question and getting close to me and trying to talk to me. And they were like those questions that are so obvious. It was just, you know, an invitation to interact with her when I didn't want to. And so she said, you know, are you waiting for the trolley? And I'm like, yes. And then I turned my back to her to pretend like I'm looking for the trolley just so she could stop asking me questions. But as the trolley came and the couple went to board the trolley and I was queued behind them, I decided not to. In my mind, I decided I am not getting on this bus with this group. I'm just not going to interact with them anymore. And they knew it. The woman said, she put her hand on the gentleman's arm and said, Althea is not getting on the bus. And I heard my name and I looked up at the gentleman who had crystalline clear eyes. And I knew right then and there, once again, like the gray, that I was having a spiritual intervention. And at that point in time, I was deciding whether or not I was going to, that year, I was deciding where I was going to live. And part of my soul's destiny was to come back to Colorado. And this was a time in which I would start reopening the doors to my spirituality and begin to take it to my heart in earnest, to study and to redevelop my skill levels and my ability to open to spiritual guidance with more ease and receptivity than resistance.
So did you get on the bus? Did they say anything else to you?
No, I turned around and kept on walking. Yeah, I actually went back to the grocery store and took a longer route. Yeah, I did. It was a lot. And again, like as we've been talking, these moments are revealing our own psychological nature. And part of those, that inner psychic field that I was looking at, was I had a lot of resistance and really an unwillingness to crack the door open to the creational forces that were behind the nature of the universe. And that's what was happening. You know, it's like I didn't feel empowered by those experiences at the time, but I do now. And so when you brought up the book, it was, I understood at that point in time that they can enter my house and go through locked doors and they can deliver messages. But I was saying to them, will you do it on a time schedule that works for my human? I was putting parameters on it. In fact, the person that endorsed my book, he was putting parameters. John Foster of Imminent Discovery, he was one of the first books that I read. It was on reptilians, unfortunately, but he was saying that he had to make a defining line in his life path to say, if you weren't going to do a give and take with me and work with me in a way that allows me to feel stable in my life, then I'm ending contact. And he ended contact. Whereas for myself, I did not. I opened to contact.
Do you define yourself as a starseed?
I define myself as a soul light with cosmic information. And the word that I'm using is starseed. It's just recognizable. I understand that I'm not necessarily earth-based in my cosmic history, and that I do bring in information that is more cosmic with the cosmic laws and the cosmic principles that come with an expanded level of consciousness when we start working with the higher levels of understanding about the nature of our universe and our place in it. So this would be like things like understanding paradox energy, right? Where you can go through a seemingly solid wall, where you can have a light body experience and yet be embodied in the physical body. So it's like it's you understanding that there's this and that and more.
And with being a starseed, is this where you may have had a life as an alien in another dimension, perhaps, or another universe, but then you come to Earth and you're incarnated in a human body? Is that how it works?
I wouldn't know how the greater perspective of the universe works. I know my personal perspective. So, for example, I believe all of us are moving towards wholeness. When we reach it or how we reach it is individualistic. And for myself, I have had many of timelessness moments. So where time, the principles of time, past, present, and future occur in the now, all at once. And in that, I've had glimpses and moments of myself having other lifetimes concurrent in different embodiments. So not even on this planet, but others.
And is this, these other lives, you say concurrent, do they kind of all work together in the same moment?
They all work together at the same moment to bring about a perspective. So if you think of a diamond and you turn a multifaceted diamond and you're looking out from different perspectives, you're seeing uniquely from your own soul's perspective, but you can turn that diamond and say, all right, this is me in this lifetime. When I moved to London, for example, in the 1970s as a child, a young child, 8, 9, 10, I recognized London. My accent came back. I could walk the streets with complete knowing of the layout of the land because the landscape hadn't changed. So you could say that was a past life, or you can say at another time and dimension, I was having an experience in London that was concurrent and at the same time informing my human personality back in the 70s.
And do you have a connection to then, what should we call them, off-world personalities at the moment?
Yes. You could say that I have connections when necessary and needed to understand myself, for example, as a gray, or understand myself as a mantid. There's like these levels of experiences when it's important for me to know it, when it's important for me to view from that lens a wider perspective of something that's going on this planet.
Have you had many encounters in this life on Earth where you, people might call it alien abduction or ET encounters?
So I don't tend to attract people who are having abduction experiences, and that might be working out of maybe the lower three chakras, you know, where they're working out personal safety issues or these type of things. That's usually not what I attract. I attract people who are aware that they are more than just the human, and they're aware of their cosmic nature and utilizing those teachings in their expression.
You mentioned the near-death experience earlier. Is it all right if I ask you about that?
Sure. There's I didn't have it in the typical way, Simon. What I did have is I started lifting out of the body and saw that my silver cord was going to snap and that I had to really work hard to get back into the physical body and to continue this life path. And I think that the moment that I had my near-death experience was one in which I had to reconfirm my commitment to having this journey as a human on the planet.
Are there times where the ETs may take you out of your body, you know, because they talk about, they call it alien abduction, where the person is taken, but it seems that they can take your, what would you call it, consciousness and leave your physical body behind.
That's right. That's, yeah. And the one that's driving the car. Yeah, absolutely. That's what happened to me here in Parker, my hometown. I was driving down the street and I was lifted out of my body. I was aware I was being lifted out of my body. And it happened very, very fast. And I was also aware that I was on ship for some type of emergency meeting, although I wasn't sure what that was about. But I was then re-slammed back into my body, so much so that it hurt. My physical feet hurt for days because I came in with such force. And when I came back in, my car was then, before I was driving the car, my car was then at a four-way stop. And, you know, I don't think I mentioned it at the book, but I actually had what I call the shots of non-remembrance. I had one appear on my knuckle of my right hand. So it was a quick moment of like where you wipe what just happened, because it's not necessary for me to remember all that and still get on with my day.
I was going to ask you about these shots of non-remembrance. I think you say that they're self-administered. So is it like you'll go and have that emergency meeting, but know for yourself, I shouldn't remember this. It's not like they are removing it for some reason.
Right. You're removing it for you. I had a girlfriend, a played-in friend of mine that that pulled rank, you could say, up on ship. And she said, she's had lifelong conscious contact, can give you specs of the inside of ships and dimensions and all the rest. But anyways, she was saying that one time she decided she did not want a shot of non-remembrance on her thumb. She just refused to give that to herself. And she came back into the physical, like I had the moment where my physical body was recalling events. She could recall everything. And she said she stared at the ceiling for 3 days. She was incapacitated to handle that level of information and get up and get on with her day. She couldn't do both. Her brain could not handle the levels of information all at once.
It's kind of like you're living in a science fiction world, like a TV show, and everybody around you is living in a dull, normal world.
It can feel like that. Sometimes you get an inner smile. We have a saying in our family when I was raising my daughter, because, you know, she has free will and obviously she doesn't need a mother telling her every moment. But if I knew that she was going to hit the wall at 70 miles an hour, because that was her chosen preference to learn from, I would say, have fun with that. And you'd get this mother moment. And she would know instantaneously that I already knew that it was going to be a painful moment. And we would intervene with a little sense of humor. Have fun with that. And I would annoy my family. Okay, have fun with that, with a wry smile. This is going to be interesting. Let me know what happens when it hurts. But again, you know, there's a sense of willfulness and we need that. I think it's healthy to have a sense of skepticism and a sense of questioning and a willful nature, because, you know, at times in your life, you just need to quit. Sometimes you just need to take a break, and it's healthy. It's so healthy for the human psyche.
With all your interactions that you have with the Greys, is it all positive? Because there are some people who will just say, no, it's all negative. I have terrible experiences.
I feel for them. I'm not Pollyanna. I've seen some really crappy things happen in life, but I think you can hear it in my voice, I have a natural propensity for joy. And I have not had experiences I'm approaching my 60s. I've not had experiences that were what I would call negative. I would say I've had human experiences where I've seen some really horrific choices humans have made. And those are painful to witness and bear witness to be honest. Those can be very, very difficult. But I do have a client that has had gray military, and she has said to me, I read your book, it's full of positivity. I didn't feel that way. You know, those aren't my experiences, but that is her deeper dive, isn't it?
Because you say in the book that the Greys are not just a, you say, a monolithic group, but rather diverse and complex, which is quite kind of saying they're just like the human race. You have lots That's of different right. viewpoints.
That's exactly it. And there's no definitive guide, you know, where you can take a whole expression of the divine or the universal expression, a soul expression, and put it in one paragraph and say, you nailed it. You know, you passed the test. You turned in your homework. It's not like that. You know, there's a nuanced expression between every sentient life on the planet. No dog is the same. No cat is the same. You know, there's sentient life to everything. And it's our job to interact with it when it comes into our life and to discover what that means to us. And each person's different. And, you know, frankly, I think there's room for differences. And I think that's what makes it exciting, that we don't just have one culture and one expression and one religion and one whatever, that we're expressing it completely differently. I think I find people's expressions fascinating. I work as a counselor. I've been doing it for years, decades, actually. And if I was bored with other people's story, I wouldn't be doing this work.
And you've had all these experiences when you were younger. Did your brothers and sisters or your parents see things? Did they maybe get up the next morning and say, you know, I saw a really bright light outside or anything like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a bit of a solo path. My mother had intuitive natural abilities. She knew when someone was going to die. She would wake up and know instantaneously that they had passed, and we would wait for the phone call in the morning. But for her, that was to the extent of it. Anything ET, frankly, freaked her out. My father is engineer type, you know, the kind that has clearance, and this is not his wheelhouse. My closest brother, the one that I'm a year apart from, who I featured in the book, had experiences, but his reaction was different from mine. I welcomed it. He feared it. And he turned to building up a kind of like a muscle to respond to it, more of a fear-based approach, like a military approach to it. I'm going to defend myself, that type of behavior. And then he became very religious to answer his questions on the universe. And I didn't. I went universal. And it wasn't until after the book, I didn't put it in, but after the book, he started opening up to me, and I would get phone calls where he would begin to relay moments throughout our childhood and his adulthood where he had interactions with UFO light beams and the timeless realms and the opening of the veil. And he became very fluent and very open to the ET contact experience after that.
I was just wondering about, you know, your initial reaction, or mine or anybody's. Well, if it's positive, then you go forwards positive. But if you have a negative one, like you're terrified, that kind of sets the way it's going to be for a while. And that when they come and interact with you, that's how it will always seem to be, as a horrible experience.
I couldn't say what that'd be for other people. I have a natural curiosity to things. And I would say if I was just locked, if I had a life where, like, say, Robert Foster, where it was an engineer mentality, and I was groomed in a very safe and nurtured way in a community, and I looked at the world in a framework that worked for me, and then something came and blew that framework apart, and then you go through that psychological unraveling, and, you know, I had it from the start. So I was looking out at the universe completely differently from universal principles from the start. So I didn't have a life where I had to say, oh no, what's that about? It was like, oh gosh, I have to re-deal with that. I have to go back and deal with that now. You know, I can't get too comfortable in this physical reality because I'm being invited to expand and to go back into levels of understanding. So what I would say is, if there's fear, that's a natural response because you're seeing yourself more as a human than your soul. And you're seeing yourself more as a fixed personality with likes and interest and belief systems. And you're moving slowly, if you choose to look at something that is, that there's an exposure to more governing laws of the universe, you know, to wider things that apply outside of this physical dimension. And these are the invitations again, but you would have to choose that, and you won't choose it until you feel you have some semblance of control.
So that's kind of what happened with your brother. He changed his viewpoint. He decided, no, I'm going to react differently to this.
He opened to his experiences without interpreting it through fear. He began listening to, I would say he took a tack like you, reading or listening to people that were articulate, that he felt had a range of understanding that spoke to him, that made sense to him, and that could draw out a language and principles that he could express more fluidly and that were relevant to him. Those were the things that I think spoke to him. For example, for me, I didn't need to necessarily name the nameless or define the nameless. In the end, I didn't need that. What I needed to do was remain open and to see what my spiritual capabilities were. So recently, this has not been, I don't want to fear-base anybody, because when you talk about things that can be triggering, meaning it's so outside your box, you don't want anything to do with that person because they may bring it into your life, right? You're not going to read that book because it might open you up to something that you don't want to have. You don't want to go near that person who has leprosy or clairvoyance or somebody that's going to, you know, open a door to something that you don't feel you have a capacity to respond to. I had picked up on, I was invited onto a show, a UFO show, and I picked up on that this person had a portal open to them and that they were, it was military, and that they were being visited, and it showed up in my home. And I went very bright. My soul just responded like that 10,000 bright. And I rolled over and went to bed. So the portal opened, I went bright, and then I rolled over and went to bed. That might not be a response to someone who doesn't know themselves as a soul.
And when you said military there, what did you mean by that?
I felt that this person was connected to some type of military project that had the capacity to open up portals and enter into that person's life. And when I brought that information to the person, they were able to confirm my experience as accurate. In fact, they drew it.
Was that kind of ET's military or humans' military?
That's human military.
Okay, so they have technology way beyond what we think they do.
Yeah, well, apparently, and I wasn't aware of it until a few weeks ago. And again, that was through an invitation to appear on a show. So I, you know, I could go fear-based. I can turn that into a narrative of, you know, us versus them, or I can just say it was dealt with and I'm moving on.
We look out into the whole universe. You have ETs, and then there's a spiritual side, which might be your guides and yourself. And there's a lot of people who put those in two completely different compartments that are totally separate. But actually, would you say they're all working together? It's all almost like the same thing?
I think when you take a look at the Contact and Bimini chapter, what I'm teaching, not overtly, very simple teachings, but if you have the wherewithal or awareness of cosmic principles, I'm teaching you about the interaction of all things. I wouldn't say I'm teaching you. That's the wrong word to use or the concept to use. I am expressing that everything is interrelated. and everything is communicating with you, and that I was open to receiving the information, whether it was through dolphins or ET, UFO, or for the person that was standing in front of me, that I was fine-tuning the information so that I could respond more compassionately and also respond more effectively. And in the end, what I think is happening is that we're opening to realms of greater awareness to become aware of our own response and our responsibility to that response. So again, moving into more of destiny by choosing your ability to consciously make a decision.
When you were in Bimini, there was a UFO sighting, wasn't there? And you were with other people and it shone some light on you. Was that light just like a spotlight that was shining a light on you, or was there more to it than that?
So at the time, it was like night went to day. It was like as if you're in the dark of your room and someone turned on the light and it was completely bright. I was engulfed in light. And in that engulfment, I think that's what triggered the third eye to begin to process the time sequence that the ETs were wanting me to receive. And I found out afterwards, I think when I received the final view of what they want, the final message of what they wanted me, I realized at that point in time on the boat that other people had or were receiving that information. They were refusing to act on it or to truly empower themselves to acknowledge it. And the difference is that I decided to act on it.
Well, it's been great talking to you. We're running out of time now. And
thank you, Simon.
The book's called Four Aliens and a Funeral. And some people might hear that title and think, oh, yeah, it's just about aliens and UFOs. But there's so much more in there, isn't there?
There is. And the way when Simon and I were talking before taping, I said I actually gave this book away. And by day six, I couldn't remember the book because it was a full giveaway. It was no longer my story. And I feel that when people are guided or if they feel guided to this book, they'll find it. It's in ebook form now. The paperback will launch this month. And I hope they enjoy it.
Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast. It's been great.
Thank you, Simon, for having me.
And that was an interview with Althea Provost about her book, Four Aliens and a Funeral, a memoir of perception. And a great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can hear the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. If you join the $2 a month tier, you get an extended episode every month. If you join the $5 a month tier, you'll have access to an extended episode every week. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. And there are over 100 extended episodes there. And please check out my other podcast. It's called Our Paranormal Afterlife. And there are over 300 episodes. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And in my work as a clinical hypnotherapist, I take people through past life regressions. I'm offering a free consultation call which can be booked on my website. And my Instagram is ourparanormalafterlife with an underscore between each word. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening. Can you tell us about what it is you do, how people could get in touch with you on your website?
Sure. So I work as an intuitive counselor, and I take people on starseed adventures or spirit-led. I'm guided to create these adventures, and I typically assemble people that have an interest in starseed adventures or the starseed.